This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, the poor pay more. Tonight's guest, Betty Furness, the president's special advisor on consumer affairs. Night Call is your program. Share your opinions and ideas with the rest of the country. Speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call in New York City from anywhere in the country. Here are Night Call's special phone numbers. From the East and the Midwest, call collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-3357. And from the New York area at 866-5010. And now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. In a ghetto store in Los Angeles, a family buys a television set, paying just about double what the same set would cost in a Beverly Hills store. In an affluent suburb of Chicago, a housewife is told that repair parts aren't available for her 3-year-old washing machine. The obvious question, in both cases, is why. The first answer has become a stock phrase, the poor pay more and get less. And again, the question is why. And why no repair parts for a washing machine? The answer there seems to be that the consumer in this country, rich, poor, or caught in the middle, seems to be getting some pretty raw deals on goods, on interest rates, and on service. What about you? We'd like to hear about your problems as a consumer in this land of plenty. And standing by in Washington, D.C. for your comments and questions is Betty Furness. Many will well remember Ms. Furness as a network, radio, and television personality. But since 1967, she's been a special assistant to the President for Consumer Interests. Ms. Furness, good evening. Ms. Furness?
Yes?
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
Fine, thank you, and thank you for being with us.
It's a great pleasure. I've read about your show, and I'm very pleased to be able to be on it.
Ms. Furness, do you agree that the poor pay more and get less?
Yes, I'm afraid they do, Mr. Shields. There are some reasons for this, but I still can't think that there's any reason that's good enough for the poor to have to pay more. It just doesn't make sense.
Does there seem to be a lack of pride in workmanship on the part of the American laborer that we are unable to manufacture products that seem to, or I should say that seem unable to last beyond the guarantee period?
I'm not certain if there's a lack of pride in labor or if perhaps management is pushing labor to the degree that they're not able to do perhaps their best work. I've heard stories about cars coming off assembly lines in Detroit where everything moved so fast that it's just not possible for a man to do his absolutely best work. So I'm not sure that labor doesn't take pride.
Well, in a country where we pride ourselves in our, well, quote, democratic principles, why is it necessary for us to pass legislation to protect the consumer?
Well, that's kind of a long story. I think it starts with the fact that our modern technology has brought so many miracles to our marketplace. You know, we have a marketplace that's better than any that the world has ever known. And we have dazzling, exciting, new, and marvelous products. But some of those miracles have brought some problems along with them. And the idea of putting the consumer on an equal footing with the producer is a relatively new idea. But we think that these products that we pay our hard-earned money for and that are supposed to be so great ought to be as great as they say they are. And in some cases, some are designed without really the consumer in mind. Some are sold without giving the consumer the proper information that they ought to have. I don't think there's going to be a need for a tremendous amount of federal legislation, but there certainly has been some, especially in the areas of truth and in the area of safety.
In the earlier statement we made, making a comparison of a television set that is on sale in a ghetto store in, well, we said Los Angeles, but of course this can fit just about any ghetto.
Big city.
Why? Why is it that the cost of an item like a TV set would cost so much more in a ghetto area?
Well, a bit of research was done here in the District of Columbia by the Federal Trade Commission, and they came up with some interesting answers about this. It seems to cost more to do business in the ghetto areas. I think that probably the merchants buy in smaller quantities, so they don't make as good purchases in the first place. They don't get as advantageous purchases as the larger stores. But their business practices are different from the downtown, the other areas' business practices. And most of it revolves around the fact that they extend credit. They extend credit to people who either couldn't get it elsewhere or who think they couldn't get it elsewhere. Now, a lot of these merchants, in knowing that they're extending credit to these people, really don't think that the people are necessarily going to pay for the items finally. So what they do is they build in the cost, even, of taking the person to court to collect, right into the cost of the television set. And you'll also find that because these people, the poor people, have not established credit elsewhere, can't get credit in bigger stores, they don't know what the enormous rates that they're being charged. They don't realize that they are exorbitant. They have no other place to go. So if they want the television set and they don't have the cash to pay for it, and who has, they go deal with the man down the street, and the man down the street is simply setting his own terms.
Do you attribute this kind of business practice as a reason for some of the unrest that we've seen the ghetto suffer over the past couple of years?
I think that there might be an element of that in there. Incidentally, I think it's very important to note that these people, these merchants who are dealing in this manner, are not making more money than the people in other areas of town. They're simply set up to do business in a fashion that is costing them more money than it costs other people, so they're not really getting rich on it. But that still has nothing to do with the fact that the poor are paying more. I think that once the unrest has gotten to the point of rioting and looting and burning, I think that it's very likely that some particular stores have been selected where the people felt that the practices were unfair. Now, we know that stores have been selected for other reasons, too, simply because they had glamorous merchandise or desirable merchandise. But I really... do believe that some of the targets, once the trouble has started, that some of the targets has been as a result of these practices.
Would you also attribute inferior goods as a reason?
Yes.
For the unrest?
Yes, I think that's likely. Although, of course, you know, the roots of the unrest are so very deep. And here we're talking now about after the trouble has started. You know, who are they going to turn and attack? But the trouble has already started, and of course the roots are far deeper than credit practices or shoddy merchandise. The roots of the real panic that causes the disorder, or the helplessness that causes it.
Tonight our conversation is The Poor Pay More, and our guest tonight calling in from Washington, D.C. is Miss Betty Furness, the President's Special Advisor on Consumer Affairs. And a reminder to you that our telephone number is in New York, 866-5010. And if you're calling in from the East or the Midwest, it's area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. And on the West Coast, it's area code 212-749-3357. Remember, we'd like to hear from you, and of course, we always welcome your calls, collect. Ms. Furness, I am assuming that of the many in-person appearances that you've made before groups throughout the country, that there is one area that perhaps people don't like to talk about openly, but I think it affects all of us. Let's talk for a moment about credit. What are we doing in this particular area to protect the consumer in the area of credit?
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought up that subject, because I hear about everything from dresses that come back from the cleaner not properly cleaned, to toys that don't last, to repairs that don't get done right. But nobody ever talks about their credit problems, and I couldn't figure out for a while why that was, until it occurred to me that, naturally, people don't want to say that they're in financial trouble. And I think that one of the reasons is that they think they have made some mistake. They think because they signed a contract that they have been in error, a contract that may get them into financial trouble. The fact of the matter is that a lot of those contracts are written so that a Philadelphia lawyer couldn't read them. They're deliberately written to be misleading or confusing, so that especially the poor people sign contracts, don't understand what they're getting in for, and very easily can get over their heads in debt. Now, we have passed one law this year that is a tremendous beginning in helping to solve that problem. That's the Truth in Lending Law. And may I take just a second to tell you how it works?
Yes, you may.
What it does, basically, is to make it necessary, mandatory, for people who are lending money or selling on time to tell the people who are buying or borrowing exactly what the annual interest rate is going to be on this transaction. It's going to have to be written in numbers on the contract. Now, my guess is that most people in this country think they pay, something like 6% for borrowing money or for buying on time. The fact of the matter is that nobody pays that little. And when somebody buys a product and looks at the contract they're about to sign to buy it on time, and they see that the interest is 36% per year, they may be appalled that it's that much. Now, the thing that this Truth in Lending Law is going to do is to make it possible for you to compare rates, so that if you think 36% per year is too much where you're trying to buy the appliance or the television set or the car or whatever it is, you can then go somewhere else and see if you can make a better deal financially. What it really does is make it possible for the consumer to shop for credit the same way that they shop for merchandise.
Ms. Finesse, we'll take our first call of the evening, and this time we'll go out to Seattle, Washington. Mr. Miller is hearing Night Call over KUOW. Mr. Miller, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I have a, not a question, but a suggestion, possibly. I subscribe to a group called Consumers Union. This is a non-profit organization, and they put out a magazine, I think it's monthly, plus a yearly summary, and they go through I think almost any product you can think of, from food down to tires, cars, and everything, and they evaluate each one, and they give an approximate retail price. Now, my suggestion would be, is there some way we can get this magazine, or perhaps not this one, maybe some other one, although this is the best one I've found, into the hands of those that fall into these traps, you might say, in the ghetto areas?
Well, one of the big problems, of course, is that that's an excellent publication, and those people do a marvelous job. But a lot of the people who are making this kind of mistake aren't going to read that sort of magazine. That sort of magazine is very appealing to the people who are less likely to get in trouble in the first place. We have a tremendous job to do on consumer education, which is really to get the kind of information across to the public, notably in the ghetto areas, the poorer people all over the country, but to get it through to them in some more appealing fashion. They don't want to read Consumers Union necessarily. They walk down the street and they see a pretty television set or a bright red dress, and that's what they want, and they want it now, which is very human and very real. And I don't think that they're all going to read the detailed description of why the innards and gizzards of one machine is more advantageous than another. It's just got to be presented in an easier, more digestible way to the less educated people.
What would you suggest, Ms. Finesse?
Well, we're working on consumer education in my office all the time, both on trying to get consumer education into the school system so that we turn out young people who have some clue about how to deal in the marketplace, because we feel that young people today are coming out of school knowing how to earn a living and not having the slightest idea what to do with the money after they've made it. And we would like to help give them some background information from which they can make their decisions. However, this, of course, doesn't help the existing consumers. So we are trying to develop some materials that could be sent around into these areas, either in printed material or perhaps some way of reaching them on the radio or on television, to give them information that will just make their shopping easier. We don't for one minute want to tell people what to buy, but we are very eager to tell them how to buy.
Yes. I have another question. Is there any evidence as to the possibility that the people that get into this type of trouble and are taken into court are repeats, that this is not only the first time this has happened to that individual?
Well, sure. People naturally are inclined to make the same mistakes a second time. And the only thing that anybody can do is try to show them where they made the mistake and show them the ropes and the guidelines, because you and I, Mr. Miller, can go downtown and make a mistake, too. And, you know, it's a free country and we're allowed to make our own mistakes. All we want to do is to try to point out where the traps are so people don't fall into traps.
Well, one more thing. When I was in the military, we had a situation where if you had trouble or if you got an accident or something when you were driving, they had you attend the safe driving lecture.
Yeah.
This was so many hours. I was just thinking possibly some type of program where a bankrupt case or a case in a small claims court for a non-payment, if part of, instead of the punishment being a garnishment or an actual punishment, could be some type of attendance to an institution that would teach this type of a buying habit.
Well, we've done some thinking along these lines. As a matter of fact, we were talking in my office only today about trying to reach the people who do go through bankruptcy, because we find that that many of them go right back and go through bankruptcy again. So obviously they haven't really learned the lesson. So we are talking in those terms. Then I heard of something very interesting that's being done, I believe, in Denver, where one of the largest retailers in the country has offered credit to some people in ghetto areas who could not get credit otherwise. They offered them up to $50 worth of credit at the store at the beginning of the school year so they could take their kids in and get school clothes and stuff. But part of the condition of offering them that credit was to take them down to the credit bureau downtown and show them what credit means and why theirs is no good, why they had not built up good credit, to try to teach them the whole idea behind getting a good credit position. So this is really the sort of thing you're talking about, and I think that steps are being taken in this direction, and it's a marvelous idea.
Mr. Lewis, thank you for calling.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Tonight, the poor pay more. Our guest tonight calling in from Washington, D.C., Miss Betty Furness, and we'll return to our guest right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Betty Furness after station identification. Night Call welcomes your comments about this nationwide listener call-in program. Your opinions and reactions are of value to the producers of Night Call in their continuing attempt to initiate and stimulate dialogue between the black man in the street and his white counterpart. Please address your comments to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. The producers of Night Call attempt to balance the points of view presented on this series about controversial issues. In keeping with this traditional concern for free expression on controversial matters, Night Call invites requests for equal time from responsible representatives on opposing points of view if it's thought they have not been adequately represented on the air. Such requests should be addressed to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in the country to Betty Furness about the poor pay more. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our guest, Miss Betty Furness, calling in from Washington, D.C., and this time we'll go out to Indianapolis, Indiana. Mrs. Banks is hearing Night Call over WTLC. Mrs. Banks, good evening.
Good evening. I'd like to ask Miss Furness about the so-called loan companies. I purchased several things from it's a new company that came out, and, it was for a sleeper, and the sleeper, time I turned it on, it started gliding all across the room, and it was a guarantee supposed to be on it, and I told the man to come and see about it, or, we wouldn't pay for it, and so we got the the envelopes with a payment from another company, and they said that they wasn't responsible for the merchandise.
Well, Mrs. Banks, yours is a classic complaint, and this is something that we've been working on from the viewpoint of legislation here. The way this works is you can buy either from a store or from a door-to-door salesman, it matters not which, and you sign a contract saying that you will pay. Then these people sell that contract to another company. That second company becomes what they call a holder in due course. And they just turn to you if something goes wrong, whether it's your sweeper or whatever it is. They say they don't care. It's not their problem. Now, we don't think that this is fair, because you can go back, if you bought it from a store downtown, you can go down to the store and holler at them and hope that they'll make good on it. But if they don't choose to make good on it, or if you've bought from a door-to-door salesman and you never see him again, there you are with a sweeper that doesn't work and a finance company that insists that you pay. If you don't pay, the finance company may even be able to garnish you wages. They may come and pick up the sweeper in default of your payment, and you may still have to keep on paying. And we can see no earthly reason why this should happen. Senator Tidings has just introduced a bill for a law here in the District of Columbia that would make the holder in due course responsible for the fact that that product is good. So if something goes wrong with your sweeper, he's got to make the fellow who sold it to you make good on it.
Why would she do that?
Well, I wish we would too, and we're not going to be able to help you with your sweeper, but this is a classic story.
Well, maybe
and I think it's one reason I'd like to say to be very careful who you buy anything from.
Uh-huh.
If you buy from any door-to-door salesman, you be sure you know who that company is and that they are reliable. Because at least if you buy from a store downtown, you can go and scream at the store, and you know the store is going to be there next week.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes these people who come around selling door-to-door, some of them, there are some very fine companies that do that, but I think we all pretty well know the names of the good companies. And for the people you don't know, you should really investigate them before you sign any contract with them.
Well, that makes sense.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
This is NyCall in New York, and tonight, the poor pay more. Our guest, Miss Betty Furness, and this time we'll go to Richmond, Virginia. Mr. Fleming is calling in from WTVR. Mr. Fleming, good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
Thank you.
Good.
Fine, thank you, I should say.
I have a question. It's a compound question, I suppose you would say.
All right, give it to us in small bits.
I was interested in knowing what became of the hearings regarding the high price food in poverty areas. I think some senator had gone to some supermarket in Washington, D.C., and had discovered that the poor were paying more for food in the ghetto areas. And I don't remember hearing what ever happened.
That was Senator Rosenthal's committee, and he looked at, he and his group looked at food prices in three different cities. They came to the conclusion that the poor were indeed paying more. Now, we have to differentiate one place here that's terribly important for everybody to understand. There are two kinds of food stores in any area. They don't have to be in the ghetto areas. The one is the supermarket, and the other is what we call the mom-and-pop stores. Now, the mom-and-pop stores have the same kind of problems that I was referring to at the beginning of the program. They buy in lesser quantity. They don't do a vast volume of business. Their insurance may be very high. They have special problems that make their being in business cost them more money. The most notable of those problems being the fact that they extend credit. And of course it costs money to extend credit. The mom and pop stores almost invariably cost more to deal with.
Right.
But for those reasons. Now then, let's for the sake of argument, let's eliminate the mom-and-pop stores. We know they cost more, whether they're on Madison Avenue or on 7th Street. When you get to the supermarkets, there have been several rather informal studies made of the supermarket area. Now, Mr. Congressman Rosenthal's group felt that they found that prices were higher in some of the supermarkets. However, the Department of Agriculture did a really quite large, voluminous study on this in this area, and they could not find that the supermarkets were charging more. I am afraid that as far as my office is concerned, we've never really been convinced that we had one study that finally established that the supermarkets charge more in the ghetto areas. But let me tell you, I have never been out and talked to the public without finding people who will swear to me that this is true. So whether it's true or not, I can tell you that the people in those areas think it's true, and that's probably as bad as it's being true as far as, you know, business relationships are concerned.
Well, there has been some stories published that prices in a particular chain are higher in certain areas.
Well, I've seen stories published saying any number of things that you couldn't actually document when you got right down to it. Of course, I've had considerable talks with the supermarket industry, and they swear by all that's holy that they're not charging any higher prices. Or at least that their platform is not to charge higher prices. Now, it's possible they claim that, you know, there may be an individual manager here or there who isn't following their rules that they don't know about. But their method of doing business is, at least in theory, not to charge higher prices. I think there's one area that's pretty well not disputed, and that is that much of the food in the ghetto supermarkets tends to be of inferior quality. Now, I don't think they bring inferior quality food in, but I think they leave it around a little longer than they'd leave it in other stores. That would be meat and produce, the things that can spoil. They apparently, in many places, they keep it till it's over the hill. So the people then, if they're paying the same that people are paying out in the suburbs, are of course paying more in effect because they're getting less. Just as you said at the beginning of the program, Mr. Shields.
Mr. Fleming?
About 2 weeks ago, there was a symposium held in Richmond on hunger in Virginia, fact or fiction. And I think the panel, as well as some of the speakers, concluded that it's a fact. I also noticed that the Appropriation Committee has decided that President Johnson will not be given the amount of money he requested for the food stamp program. So what I'm wondering now is, what kind of relief is there in sight to assist the poor in getting more food, especially if the value of the dollar is, you know, less each day?
Yes, I know.
And there you're going to have these people continually going to these mom and pop stores getting credit and not being able to get additional money. What's going to happen?
Well, Mr. Fleming, I think that some of the tide is turning in these business areas. I find in my conversations with the food people, all the food people, the supermarkets and the grocers, that they are really eager to try to help out this situation. I think they're getting a really very good sense of social responsibility. And in addition to their sense of social responsibility, they're beginning to realize that they're talking about the 20 or 25% of the people in this country who are going to buy food. And as time goes on, they're going to buy more food because certainly this country is not going to tolerate their being in the kind of poverty they're in now. And I think you'll see that people are going to try to help. They're going to try to help build business in the ghetto areas, try to start the local people into business, which I think is the most sound way to do it, or if they move in their own supermarket chains, to hire the local people. I don't know that you'll see it all tomorrow morning, but I know that that's the trend that the conversations are taking now. So I think there is hope that the ghetto people will be better served, and the rural people also.
I suppose the only hope is to get rid of some of the mom and pop stores, because I'm familiar with one in the area where I work that hires a boy about 13 years of age, and he works from 4 to 8 through the week, and from 8 till about 8 o'clock on Saturdays. And this young man receives $10 per week from the people who own this store. And in many of the other stores, they don't hire any people who live in that area at all. So it's unfortunate.
Well,
I don't know if getting rid of the stores is the problem. I think maybe we have to change the practices that are involved, because to many people, the mom-and-pop stores are very, very convenient.
Yeah, they're very convenient for some people, but at the same time, I think if you were to add up the disadvantages, they may outweigh the convenience.
Well, of course, the thing that makes the whole American system work where it does work, and we know it doesn't work as well in the ghettos, is competition.
Right.
And if your mom-and-pop store is your only store, if you've got no place else to go, that is certainly to the advantage, to the disadvantage of the shopper. The shopper ought to have an opportunity to compare prices and to get some of the advantages of shopping at a supermarket if they want them.
Right, right.
Mr. Fleming, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Miss Betty Furness, and our conversation on The Poor Pay More right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Betty Furness after station identification.
What do I really want? Well, the same things any man wants, black or white. I want a decent job. The same chance as any man to better myself, to get ahead. I want a home my wife won't be ashamed of. I want our kids to grow up as proud of being black as of being American. I want to be able to give them what they want, and maybe a little extra. If I don't get all the things I want, it should be because I failed, pure and simple, not because I'm black. I want nothing more than anyone else, but nothing less either.
It isn't easy to get by in the city these days, for blacks or whites. Our cities need help, your help. If you think there's nothing you can do to help, think harder. Send for the free booklet, The Turning Point. Write Night Call, Pomona, New York. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in the country to Betty Furness about the poor pay more. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And welcome to the Night Call stations who join us nightly for the second half hour. Our guest tonight, Ms. Betty Furness, the President's Special Advisor on Consumer Affairs, and Ms. Furness is calling in from Washington, D.C., and tonight we are conversing on the poor pay more. So if you are poor, well, if you've had consumer problems, we'd like to hear from you. We'll go out to New Orleans. Mrs. Piso is calling in from WDSU. Mrs. Piso?
Yes?
Good evening.
Good evening. Miss Furness, I'm most happy to speak to you inasmuch as you are advising the president on consumers. I am an American woman who has been going broke by paying more and more, and one does not have to come from the ghetto to do this. Now, in the course of events, one usually ends up in court when one is taken, and I find that in the courts is where most of the women, through a male judiciary, really get the works. Now, here in New Orleans, we have a Better Business Bureau, and it's phony from the beginning to the end. And on a program, I had used a copy from a congressional record which exposes the Better Business Bureaus throughout the country. Now, what can be done to give women relief from this?
Well, Mrs. Piso, I've been in my job a year and a half, and it's the first time I've heard anybody say that women were particularly discriminated against as far as consumer practices are concerned. I don't say it's not so. I'm just chalking it up as a first. One of the things that my office has been hoping is that every state in time will set up a state consumer commission, that the governor will appoint such a commission within a state to make state laws and decide how consumer problems should be handled locally. Because it's clearly not possible for Washington to solve all the problems that come along. We can't and we shouldn't. There should be doorstep justice for people who are in trouble. The Better Business Bureaus try to do a job in this area, but they're limited in what they can do because they really don't have authority beyond the people who are their own members. They have, a respect around town, but the way to approach the Better Business Bureau is to ask them a question before you get involved in something rather than after the problem has arisen, because that's when they can be of more help. Now, if you have other problems, I'm not too familiar, just offhand, with the situation in Louisiana. I know that there is a volunteer consumer group in Louisiana, and I know they're very active and very good. And if you would write to my office, if you don't know where they are, I can tell you how to get in touch with them. Beyond that, if you have problems that are consumer problems that are of a legal nature, and of course some are and some aren't. Some of them are just a pain in the neck and nothing that a lawyer could do anything about. But if you do have problems that might border on fraud or involve the law, then you should contact either your district attorney or the attorney general of the state.
Oh, Miss Vanessa, please, don't you know really who I am? I am the woman who endeavored to run as a gubernatorial candidate, as a write-in candidate 4 years ago, and my God, that's when I learned how crooked and corrupt our attorney general was. Recently, I have attempted to become a presidential candidate, and it's practically impossible. I just had a federal case in court, and believe me, the judge's opinion, which he has written, is absolutely a disgrace to American womanhood. As far as law is concerned, it is something that I have pursued a great part of my life. Several of my cousins are judges, and several of my cousins are attorneys here in New Orleans, and my no-good distant cousin is the mayor.
Mrs. Piso?
And believe me, our laws are very strange. I had a case recently
Mrs. Piso.
In the state court.
Mrs. Piso?
Yes?
I'm sorry, but we are discussing now the poor pay more, and if you want to...
The poor do pay more, and when they come into court, they get no satisfaction through these male judges.
All right, well, we'll see what Ms. Vanessa has to say. Thank you very much for calling. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. This time we'll go out to Helena, Montana. Miss Dillon is hearing Night Call over KCAP. Miss Dillon, good evening. Miss Dillon?
Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I have a couple of questions for Betty. First of all, along the lines of teaching the consumer, the poor consumer, how to buy, first of all, I would like to know what type of laws do we have that would be applicable to the quality of food in these areas? Say, for instance, how long fresh food can stand, vegetables can stand in a market without having to be marked down or dated as to their quality, considering that the consumer many times does not have the knowledge or perception to see this for himself.
There is, to the best of my knowledge, there are no laws whatsoever regarding how long food can be left around at any price, either at the price that's initially charged or at sale price. I think that it doesn't have to be thrown out until the seller can't stand the smell of it anymore.
I see. Then secondly, I'd like to know what type of wide-range program for teaching home economy and meal planning, how to better spend your dollar food-wise, do you have for people in these areas?
We are working on these programs. We don't have them all developed as yet. Of course, there are many government booklets that are available to help people from the home economics general viewpoint. We're looking for even other ways to do that. There is a group in San Francisco called BAND, B-A-N-D. For the moment, I can't even think of what those initials stand for. They do stand for something. But they are a group that's working through the Office of Economic Opportunity, and they've gotten out some really excellent little consumer hints and stories in comic book form, so that they're attractive to read and they're well-stated, and they teach people some do's and some don'ts. It's this kind of material that we're working on. We don't as yet have it all ready, but that's the sort of thing that we want to deal with.
Yes, because it would seem to me that many people who are even on welfare, receiving some type of support this way, can go out and do not know how to spend that money wisely. They can take that check and go out and buy pop or popcorn and candy, and without knowing how to economically plan a meal.
It's very true. They not only don't know how to plan economically, but they don't know how to plan nutritionally either.
Yes.
And don't necessarily buy the right things for their families. There's a lot of work to be done here. We hope that local groups will start programs of their own on this. This is something that we can't do all by ourselves, but we are working on materials to use at least as a for instance as to how it should be done locally.
Yes. Well, to my knowledge, a person in most areas receiving a type of welfare is under no obligation to disperse this money in any particular way.
No, that's true. They can do anything they like with the money, and we would not change that. We would not tell them what to do with the money. All we want to do is give them information so that they can perhaps handle their money more wisely if they want to.
Yes.
Thank you for calling, Ms. Dillon.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. The poor pay more is our conversation tonight with Ms. Betty Furness, the president's special advisor on consumer affairs, who's calling in tonight from Washington, D.C. And this time we'll take a local call from New York. Mrs. Mack is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM. Mrs. Mack, good evening.
Good evening. Hello?
Yes, your question.
Mrs. Mack.
Yes, I'm calling. I was listening to the program, and I couldn't help but think that poor actually pays more, because I myself am a victim of being poor. Well, it's not really a victim of being poor, but say, for instance, I think that it's not too many single people that are affected majorly by the fact that poor are paying more. And the reason why I say that is because, as for myself, when I was married young, and my husband was young, and we both were poor. So when we went to the like large stores that you say like downtown, we were refused like credit because he was still classed for service. He had no reference, no credit reference, no place. So it pushed us to go to the small neighborhood store to shop for our furniture, which is a major bill, more or less. Well, when we go to the local stores, here you have to bring into the credit union the loans. And naturally, you're going to have to pay, like, a commission for these loans, loaning you this amount of money. Now, I think that if there was a type of program, perhaps, that to start young people off that are forced to go to these people to make loans. Now, for myself, I knew that I would have to pay more, but regardless of how much we tried from the major stores, we couldn't get credit. So I was wondering if maybe there was some type of program that could help the young people to get an established credit maybe with the larger stores.
Well, I don't know of any specific program aimed just at young people. I trust you heard me mention the one that's taking place in Denver now, where they're extending credit and trying to teach the value of credit. Of course, anybody who has had no experience with money may be a poor credit risk.
Yes.
And you'll find that most business people are pretty hard-headed about that. You know, they don't
yes.
want to extend credit if they're not pretty darn sure they're going to get paid.
It's true.
But I think that I'm hopeful that people will take into consideration just what you're talking about, because the other end of your story, you know, young people getting married and trying to set up at just a decent house. I'm not even talking about luxuries, but you know, they'd like a bed and a couple
yes.
of chairs and
yes.
a stove and an
yes.
icebox, that kind of thing. They can get over their heads now, because you can't get credit downtown, but uptown you can get more credit than you ought to have.
Yes.
And nobody teaches the young people the difference between, you know, enough and too much. And, of course, the other end of this can be real tragedy.
Yes,
people
I think
can
it's
get
true.
In over their heads so they never get out, marriages break up, husbands leave home, and these transactions get to be far more important than the actual credit transaction itself.
It is very true, because then, like, on TV or radio, every day you have these credit loans calling, come, you can get furniture, a whole room of furniture for $199. They aren't telling you that this furniture is going to break up within a couple of months or after a year's use, and then you're still in debt for this, and you have to go and buy more where you
right.
you're paying twice as much
right.
for something that's not going to last as long.
That's right.
And I speak because I know, because when we first got married, believe me or not, I lived for 6 months, and my husband went out, and he got like a radio for the house, and I told him, I say, you know something? I say, this is all that we're going to get, because the first piece of furniture we had, we actually paid double the price for the furniture. So I waited 6 months before I got one chair for my living room, but I was determined that before I would pay double, I could save my money and make out with what I had. And that way, I went down, I paid the money for my, I put the money in the bank, I paid part of the money on my chair, and I went to the bank. And with me having money in the bank, I could establish my own credit
right.
this way.
But, you're a nice old-fashioned lady is what you are.
No, I think that sometimes that the young people especially, like I say, when we get married, we want to haste to finish our apartment off because we know that the older folks or our friends are going to be dropping by to more or less see how we are doing, in other words.
Sure.
So I think that it would be wise if it was something established among the young people especially, because if they could be persuaded to wait a couple of months, I mean, maybe they wouldn't have to wait as long as I did, but I waited for something that I wanted. I didn't have to take a second choice.
Right.
Mrs. Mack, thank you for calling.
Well, okay.
Thank you so much.
I think there what Mrs. Mack is talking about, we're right back to consumer education again, because, now, she did the right thing.
Miss Finesse, I'm going to ask you to hold for just a moment, because we have to go into station identification.
All right.
Thank you. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Betty Furness after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, the Arabs live there too, with Middle East expert Alfred Lilienthal. Mr. Lilienthal is that relative rarity, a pro-Arab Jew. He says that once again, as we enter the quadrennial madness of our presidential elections, our candidates will ignore the real self-interest of the United States in the Middle East to pander to the Jewish vote. And he says that what happens in the Middle East right now is easily hundreds of times more important to our country than what happens in Vietnam, win, lose, or draw anytime. And he says the Russians are only too delighted to find themselves backing the Arabs as we back Israel. After all, it's the Arabs that have all the oil. Alfred Lilienthal, a Middle East expert and a pro-Arab Jew. The Arabs live there too. Tomorrow night on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in the country to Betty Furness about the poor pay more. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And this time we'll go out to the city of brotherly love, to Philadelphia. Mrs. Stevens is hearing Night Call over WHAT. Mrs. Stevens?
How nice it is to talk to you. I've sent you carbon copies of letters twice within the last 6 months, one for myself and one for a brother-in-law. Now, the last one was for him. In March of this year, he traded in a 1967 Ford for a 1968 Dodge Polara. He's had the car back at least 12 times. Now, when he takes it back to the shop, the men, you know, who repair it are beginning to complain because he brings it back. But he keeps having trouble with the brake, with the stop switch or something. I don't know anything about cars. And they are beginning to complain because he brings it back. Now, he wrote a letter to Chrysler Motors, and I took it to work and made photocopies. And, of course, I sent you a photocopy. I don't know if you received it. And he hasn't received his return receipt from the letter that he sent registered to Chrysler Motors on October 2nd. In the meantime, he's wondering what he should do because he's still having trouble with the car.
Well, he's done exactly the right thing. In any transaction, if you can't get satisfaction from the retailer or the service organization, as in this case, the thing to do then is to contact the manufacturer. Now, if he doesn't hear very shortly from his letter, tell him to write to me or you write to me on his behalf because we have had a request from the Automobile Dealers Association that when we get complaints about bad servicing on cars, that we notify the people who write that if they would care to, they can write to this association and the association will see what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
We don't turn over our mail to anyone. But we are doing this in a couple of instances where if people want to know where they can contact someone because they've not gotten satisfaction, we'll tell them. So if he doesn't hear shortly from the parent company, you just write to me and say that, you know, that that's who you are from this radio
or
program.
Should the second copy be sent to you registered, requested,
no,
or return receipt?
No, straight mail will come right through to me. Don't worry about it.
I sent one for him. You know, there's a post office and everything right on my job.
Yeah.
And I did send you a carbon copy. At the same time, I sent the original to Chrysler Corporation.
Yes.
And he told me today that he still has not received his return receipt from Detroit, Michigan.
Well, now, it might be different. What's his name?
His name is James B. Brown.
James Brown.
Yes.
Okay. I'll look it up in my office, and if we can get our hands on that letter easily, I'll simply write back and tell you who these people are that you can contact.
All right.
If you don't hear from me in a week or so, you write me another letter, because it might be that I can't get my hands on that one. But I'll alert them to look for your letter, and incidentally, anybody wants to write to me about any of their problems.
Oh, believe me, I do. I don't know if I always get the title right. On this, I have carbon copy, Betty Finesse, Chairman of the President's Commission for Consumer Protection.
Well, that's very good, but I'll tell you the whole truth. All you have to do is write Betty Finesse, the White House, and the mail comes right through to me.
All right.
Without all those middle words.
Mrs. Stevens, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
This is Night Call in New York, and this time out to Storrs, Connecticut. Mr. Harris is hearing Night Call over WLTW. Mr. Harris, good evening.
Good evening. I'd like to ask Mrs. Finesse if she could tell me whether graduate students could get aids for something like food stamps, because it seems like we're pretty poor, and the food prices are sort of impoverishing us even more.
Well, I don't know what the exact qualifications are for food stamp aid, but you can find that out locally. You have to be pretty hard up because that's what the whole program is about. But you can find that out locally where you are, and if you don't know who to ask, drop me a note and I'll tell you who to.
Oh, thank you very much.
All right.
And could you tell us why food prices are so high?
Well, food prices are high because we live in a free economy and prices have been going up and there doesn't seem to be much we can do about it. We're very distressed about it. You know, the government doesn't establish either price ceilings or wage ceilings. And one of the penalties of our being in really a very good economy right now is the fact that prices have gone up. And the government doesn't want to take any steps to do anything about it because we don't want a recession. If we have a recession, this means that people get put out of work, and that's the last thing we want.
We should have the economic finesse to be able to keep some sort of stability in prices.
Well, you know, the president urged that tax...
The poor people even more than anybody else.
Yes, I know it does. The poor people and the older people who are living on fixed incomes. But the president urged the tax surcharge for months before he got it passed for this very reason, because... the economist said that would help to cool the economy, that we were just all spending too much money. Now, so far, it hasn't cooled the economy to the degree that they hoped it would, but then it's a relatively new step, and we hope that will help. And I'm advised by the economic advisors that prices should... They're not going to go down in the immediate future, but they should stop going up at the rate that they have been going up, and we can all hope for that.
In other words, we can stay as poor as we are now if we have a fixed income.
Well, we're all optimistic.
For the moment, yes.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll take our final call of the evening back to New Orleans this time, and Mr. Bradshaw is hearing night call over WDSU. Mr. Bradshaw?
Hello.
Good evening, sir.
Hi. I have about five real fast questions that I'd like to ask Mrs.
Try three.
Okay. Do you believe in fixing one set of prices for the poor and one for the rich? In other words, a differentiated set of prices, lower for the poor and lower for the rich. What do you define as being poor? What is this a minority problem, do you feel? Is it mostly defined as being a problem of minority groups?
I think that, you know, the poor in this country, the most of the people who are poor are white. However, because the Negro is a minority, there are more poor Negroes within the Negro group. But the great majority of the poor in this country are white people. So this is not a minority problem. As far as the whole country is concerned, as far as the black race is concerned, it is indeed a very special problem to them because more of them are poor. Now back to, do I think there should be two price scales? There is no way in a free economy to set up two price scales, one for the poor and one for the rich. I don't know how you would go about doing that, but I will go to my death screaming that the poor shouldn't be paying more. It just doesn't make sense to me. And business has got to worry about it, and government's got to worry about it, and we've got to get together and solve it, because it's absolutely blatantly ridiculous.
Does the government have a credit union plan for borrowing money at low interest rate?
Well, a credit union for whom?
For anyone.
Well, the credit unions are federally backed all over the country, so it is a federal program in effect.
And do you believe in some type of prime TV time being used to educate the poor, being paid for by government money?
Well, I think it would be fine if we could work out the system. I don't even know that you have to have it in prime time. I think you can have it in other time. We haven't developed the right programs thus far.
Yes.
But I think they ought to be on. I don't think the government should have to pay for it. I think the network should give it away. I think it's that important. Because if the government pays for it, the taxpayers are paying for it. I think the networks who make a vast amount of money can afford to give time to this country.
And one last question. Because a man is uneducated, do you feel he is poor?
No, not at all.
I know some very rich and educated people.
Sure. He doesn't have to be poor.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Miss Finesse, we have just about 30 seconds.
Then you talk to me.
Well, we want to thank you for being with us. And I was concerned about one aspect, and I don't know if we have enough time to go into it, but Mrs. Mack had mentioned the fact that she had heard on certain radio stations some of the advertising which she felt that she had been a victim of, and I was wondering if we are moving into the direction of better policing of commercials on radio and television stations.
Well, it's very difficult to police some of these things because if they're telling, unless they're lying, you can't police them.
Ms. Finesse, thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, the Arabs live there too with pro-Arab Jewish Middle East expert Alfred Lilienthal. Listen tomorrow night, discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition. We'll be right back.